I'm so excited to share with you that the doors are officially open for my first ever phone-free event that's happening in Los Angeles, California on February 28th at Mudwater Gather in Santa Monica, with the option for you to dive even deeper on March 1st. Now look, this event is about you. It's about you building connections and community and us all really bringing this analog revolution to life and reminding our hearts and souls what we truly crave most, what nourishes our being, which is co-regulating with other humans, having our mirror neurons dance together, sharing experiences together, but also learning together. So on top of all the community and connection possibilities for you, there's also an incredible lineup of speakers. I've got internationally renowned nervous system expert Sarah Baldwin, Nike master trainer Brandon Collingsworth talking about purpose and meaning, and Mandy Balak, who's the president of the Gathering Festival, which is one of the largest marketing and branding conferences in North America. So we're going to be diving deeper into what does the future look like to walk alongside technology and use technology as a tool. Now look, if you want to dive even deeper, there's limited space for a VIP dinner on the Saturday night. And if you want to go even deeper, if it's aligned for leaders, coaches, therapists, entrepreneurs, branding, marketing, whoever is called, there's a mastermind on the Sunday morning with even more limited seating. And that's going to be about what does the future look like to create in this world with technology. So if this sounds like something you're interested in, you want to find out more and save your spot, go to markgroves.com/future. I can't wait to see you there. Hello and welcome to the Mark Groves podcast. You'll notice a consistent sort of point of curiosity or inquiry that I have as of lately, and that is my relationship to technology. You know, to be honest with you, I've felt in some ways sort of powerless to the power of social media platforms. And I remember years ago looking at the news and it was about politics and I felt so engulfed by it. Like I needed to consume more. And in a lot of ways, it felt like when I would overeat or, you know, want to drink too much. It was like this insatiable need that to just get more information and participate in the drama of what was going on. And this is going to sound kind of weird, but that's fine. It felt like when I was looking at my phone that it was literally pulling my face out of my body, like pulling me out. And, you know, it was like I was being infiltrated or exploited. It was a really weird feeling. And to be honest with you, that wasn't enough to alarm me. Even though I had that feeling, it was like, oh, well, I guess I should just keep consuming this stuff. It was almost like I needed more. And it wasn't until the last 3 months that I really experienced a lot more anxiety in my relationship to technology. And I was starting to really assess, like, how does this affect my health? How do I take charge of this relationship? Because right now, I don't actually feel like I'm in control of it. And you might have noticed that I took a couple weeks off Instagram where I didn't post at all for the first time in 7 years. I took 2 weeks off completely where I just wanted my page to sit vacant and me to have space and to delete the app from my phone and just how do I want to relate to this thing? How do I want to relate to my phone? And part of this journey was I actually heard about this phone called the Light Phone, and it only had text messaging, music, podcasts, and now directions on it. But they weren't like a fancy interface. It was like monochrome, like black and, you know, like a sort of beigey background or a light background. And so it wasn't like stimulating my brain of like, oh my God, here's 4 million colors. It was like, okay, just like pretty simple, kind of like an old calculator. And I was really fascinated by this technology and this company that was really about rehumanizing us, like making it so our phone wasn't this place of addiction, that it was actually a place that contributed to our lives, but it didn't actually pull us away from the beauty of being in person. And so I reached out to the company to interview one of the founders, Kai, and I wanted to ask him, like, how did they come up with this? It's such a cool story, and the story of the company was really interesting, and why they wanted to create this technology and this phone. And I was really just inspired by the willingness to go against like how much we want more technology and more automation and more. And I'm like, no, what if it's about actually returning to the circadian rhythms of the earth? What if it's about like using phones in a way, like not just totally rejecting technology, but allowing it to complement our life, but not be our life? Because, you know, they talk about the singularity, and the singularity being this moment where human and technology no longer has a differentiation, that they become one. And I was thinking about that because the idea is that moment is in the future. And I'm like, isn't it already here? Like if we have subcontracted so much of our processes, like our memory and our communication to these devices, and if we can't live without them, then are they not part of us if we are dependent upon them, if we are addicted to them? And I kind of thought, like, what happens if we can fall in love with inconvenience again? You know, it's a really weird thought process that I'm exploring because I come back to that moment where I felt like I was being extrapolated from, and I'm like, okay, how do I get me back before that moment? And how do I relate to technology in a way that's empowering, but also like use it to facilitate the expression of my passions and my dream, and that I participate in an equitable and humane relationship with you, with technology and my content. You know, that like people aren't trying to create content that gets likes or like gets viral, but rather is just an authentic expression of their experience. And so as I navigate that, I invite you to maybe navigate it with me and what that looks like and what can our world look like using technology in a different way. And so I really was very excited to interview Kai today about what inspired them and what do they see the future looking like, and what is it about technology that inspired this creation? Before we get started with today's episode, wherever you listen to it, please give it a 5-star review and a written review. Those are so helpful. And make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode. I've got some heaters coming up too, which I'm really excited about. So without further ado, here is Kai from the Light Phone. All right. Welcome, Kai. I'm so excited to have you. Thanks for taking the time, because I know as the creator of the Light Phone, maybe tech, entering into the tech world, you've got good boundaries around it based on your creation. So thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And so for the people listening, what you need to know is that this man and his co-founder, Joe, of the Light Phone, have had an integral role in my own boundaries around technology. And for those who have no idea what the Light Phone is, can you describe it for them, Kai? Because I think it's interesting because it's revolutionary, you know, in a lot of ways, but please share.
Yeah, no, I mean, we always said that Light Phone is designed to be used as little as possible. So we created a simple phone that only offers you the absolute essential without distraction. We strip away advertisement, we strip away data collecting. So all we wanted to offer people are utility tools, you know, making phone again.
Yeah.
So Light Phone 2, our current product, is a 4G simple phone. It has phone call, text message, music, podcast, alarm clock. We are about to launch direction, and you know, you could use Light Phone 2 as your only phone, as almost half of our users do, or you could use Light Phone 2 as your secondary phone for weekend or, you know, after work. We have a lot of people using Light Phone 2 as their only phone, but have the smartphone, you know, with them in a backpack or pocket as a mini computer. So there's a lot of use case since we launched Light Phone, you know, a couple of years ago. It's been interesting.
Yeah, and it sounds weird that a company wants you to use your phone less in a world that has commoditized our attention. So the fact that you're like, we actually don't want you to be on it as much is amazing.
Yeah, no, it's pretty logical for us, for me, obviously. I think technology is supposed to be a really advanced tool, right? I always think about those tools as like hammer, screwdriver, right? You use it, you put it back. You use it when you need it. And then when you're done with this task, you put it back, put it away. It's disappeared. It's not in front of you. It's not trying to say, oh, swipe your hammer for 2 hours so I can collect all your data so I can make money, right? It's not supposed to be like that. I mean, when we started the company five and a half, six years ago, you know, we told people that we're not really anti-smartphone or anti-technology per se. You know, I love all those tools that I could video chat my family, grandparents, my parents 1,000 miles away. But what if like Saturday morning, all I wanted to do is just take a walk down the street, you know, or just go to the park with my girlfriend? Why do I have to bring a mini computer that's designed to take my time, attention, and data away? And why can't I just have the tools that I wanted to use without all distraction? And you know, like when we start a company, we're doing the research. I'm just sitting there in the train station, airport, or just in the restaurant. Like if you look up, it's crazy how many of us just swiping our phone 90% of the time, disregarding what's in front of you, your kids, your partners, or what the food in front of you. You know, like the conversation, eye contact, all disappeared. Is this how we wanted to move forward as a human species with technology? Like, if that's the case, we all stay in the box, put on our goggle, put on our headphones, and that's it.
Which is so wild to think about, you know, that we have so much life living in front of us at all times and in all moments of every day, and we are often not there. We're often on Twitter, or we're often on Instagram, and we're missing all of what you're saying, like going for a walk with your girlfriend. Why do you have to bring, when you say a mini computer with you, it really makes you think about it.
Yeah, and I don't think it's an accident. I think a lot of people understand that by now. Like, it's by design. Billions and billions of money being invested into all this tech company, and you know, most of them, millions in apps, social media, are making money through your time, attention, and data. When Joe and I first joined this Google incubator, that's where we met. That's when we started a company in 2014, actually. And we were encouraged to build mobile application, you know, by Google, by the team. Obviously, that makes sense. But when we started talking to different investors, different successful founders, and we start to realize that, wow, everyone's talking about this metrics, this KPI regarding how much time the users spend in their product, you know, and bragging about, oh, okay, I'm successful because average users spend 6 hours in my product, in my app every day. And this is how much data I collected from them. So I could categorize those users, sell those data to advertisement, and say it's free to users, but you know, I'm taking all this data away and sell it for profit, right? So, you know, and most of app, our social media are doing the same thing. And to us, it's just like, wow, this is so unfair. Right? And as a designer by trade, as a technologist by trade, you realize that, wow, how much resource being invested into creating a machine like this? And there's no company out there trying to point this out or trying to do something different. You know, Google, Apple, Samsung, they're all doing the same thing. And I think that's kind of when we realized we wanted to do something completely different, creating another app, just the last thing this society needed from us. So we decided to create this brand Light. You know, Light Phone is our first product. We wanted to be, you know, a secondary phone, the first generation of iPhone. We want it to be a secondary phone. We're not trying to compete with smartphone. We're trying to say we all have different shoes, different clothes for different occasion, right? Smartphone is great for so many things, but, you know, what if this couple of days, this hour is all I need, just the tools without a distraction. And that's why we created iPhone. And when we, you know, start shipping iPhone back in 2016, we started getting feedback from customer, you know, how do you feel like going light, meaning leave your smartphone behind and take iPhone with you, right? How do you feel about it? And a lot of people come back to us saying that the initial anxiety, the stress when you go out without your smartphone is huge. you're standing there queuing up to buy grocery. You don't know what to do. You look around. You're like, oh, there's no escape. You tap your pocket. You don't. You're afraid of making eye contact. You're afraid of making small conversation. And everyone seems to have that problem at the first 10, 15 minutes. But the magic moment is that after that, a lot of people forget about smartphone, forget about anticipation, expectation of social media, posts, likes, comments, and people start to pay attention to the strangers in front of me, start to make eye contact, notice details that you never notice walking down the street that you walk past thousand or million times every day. And they all come back saying that that was the best experience or best time they have for the day and for the week, even for the month, because they memorize what's happening. They remember they talk to this weird guy in front of them, but turns out they have this common interest of, I don't know, space or stars. It was really encouraging at the time for us that realize, you know, that initial anxiety turns into a big relief. And people start to actually acting like human. So it was really encouraging at the time.
You know, who would have thought that phones would co-opt so much of our consciousness and take over so much of our interaction that just this revolutionary act of leaving your phone at home. And of course, we recognize the convenience. You know, what you're saying is there's nothing wrong with technology and there's nothing wrong with having a phone. And for emergencies and things like that, amazing. And, you know, I love that you have podcasts and music, because one thing I do is I listen to podcasts when I'm walking, you know, stuff like that. But this last weekend, I completely unplugged and I was totally off grid. And I felt just this calm of my own presence within. I was in nature. And I just thought, I re-entered the world. I turned on. So normally my relationship with my light phone too, I have the light phone too, is that it is my weekend, or like when I don't want to have my smartphone, I have it, like you said, users. So it's funny. Yeah. I'm like your classic secondary phone user. It's in my backpack if I need it, but I don't want it. I don't want it now that I know the benefit of not reaching in my pocket to look for a social media thing. Cause you were saying that and it makes me think of, there's this really cool video I remember that went viral that had this woman walking down the street. And as she was walking down the street, she's looking at her Google Maps and she walks down and she finds the thing she's going to. And then there's another version of the story that they show where she's walking down the street and she has a map. She doesn't know where she's going and she asks this guy for directions. And then it shows, have you seen this one where it shows them in the future getting married?
Yeah, definitely. Like you did not miss the moment when you
right.
And it was fascinating.
Well, and I think how many, you know, you think of the butterfly effect, you know, like how many moments that we are looking down when we're in line at the grocery store, as you said, or at Starbucks or wherever we do our thing. Yeah. And like I even noticed on the weekend when I was unplugged and other people were still plugged in where you could get Wi-Fi. I notice, like, even in when people are lined up to go to the bathroom or anything like that, whenever there's just a moment that isn't filled with an Instagram post or a scroll or taking a picture, people have such a hard time being present to it. And then we wonder why we have so much anxiety or depression or, you know?
Yeah, my favorite stories or user's experience was from this lady. She was telling us, like a simple things like queuing up to pay for something, and like Light Phone or Going Light, that experience almost like giving herself the permission, giving herself the okay to just standing there. It's okay. It's 20 seconds. It's 2 minutes. Just standing there, look around. It's okay. Not, you're not gonna miss much, if anything at all, on Twitter and social media. It's okay. And then if she feel this relief, it just fascinating. At the same time, it's not just that. We have a lot of users coming back, telling us that they feel more productive when they are away from their smartphone. When they go like, we have this gentleman say that his heart rate actually reduced when he switch off his smartphone and use Light Phone.
I could see that.
Sleep better sleep is something that we hear very common among our users. They would try to like leave the smartphone in the other room, or leave the smartphone outside the bedroom and try to sleep, and they actually feel better. Like all this health benefits come with disconnecting from time to time. It's really profound, and we've been trying to sharing those experience with our potential users, just saying that, hey, I know, it's not really about Light Phone. Hammer is not really about hammer. It's about doing that job quickly and put it away. That's what's supposed to be. Technology is supposed to be invisible. You're not supposed to be become the center of your life. Like Google Glass or Apple Watch become this like the center of conversations. I think that's always the guideline of how we design or start a company, even our product, even our videos, images of Light Phone, everything that we do. We want it to be invisible but efficient. And in a way, a lot of people said that, why can't I just turn off my smartphone? Why can't I just use app that restrict your usage on smartphone? Can I just delete my social media? Would I do the same thing? I always said that, yeah, I mean, if that helps, I'm all for it. I think that's great if that helps you. As a matter of fact, Google, Apple, Samsung, they all introduced their wellness app a couple of years ago after this whole backlash of smartphone addiction, right? They all introduced that wellness app. What happened so far? You spent 6 hours on social media. Does that stop you? And how many times you see people delete Facebook, put it back, leave Twitter, saying, I'm never gonna use Twitter again after 2 weeks, come back saying, oh, I can't resist the boredom, I can't resist the friends in Twitter. It just, in our point of view, the only way to actually reclaim our attention, to actually disconnect, is move away from the ecosystem of Apple and Google, so you're not tempted to go back. And I do feel like this is beyond self-control at this stage. The money, resource, the talents being invested into creating this machine, it is beyond self-control. Like if you give a device, any device, to a kid, just watch the interaction. Their face turn blank. They stop interacting with you. They get almost like their soul gets sucked into a screen. I have a niece and nephew. They were 8 and 10. Every time they touch a device, they just stop talking to me. Doesn't matter what I say. They just, they are not interacting. It's like the the most basic human that nature. Like it's just very powerful. And I feel like, Light Phone is a way that we wanted to offer people as a channel to get away. You could also say, hey, I do yoga. They do weekend disconnect. I think that's great. But weekend disconnect trip costs you what, $2,000? You can get a Light Phone. You can do that every day.
Well, to think of because you're right, a phone and what it offers, even the colors on it, the mesmerizing amount of information, it's all designed to keep you on it. It's all designed, as you said, there's lots of brilliant people whose job is to figure out how to keep you on the phone. You know, and that, when I think about what you said about children, and, you know, you watch the Social Dilemma, and all these former execs are, none of their kids have access to technology. So that tells you, you know, the danger of it and what's happening to our brains and, you know, our inability to be present in a moment, our inability to have eye contact. And for kids, you know, when they're young and they're observing around the world, instead of being in an iPhone or an iPad, they're learning empathy, they're learning communication, they're learning how to, you know, model adults. And when they're not,
like we are, we communicate through so many different ways, right? We communicate through our facial expression, we communicate through our hand gesture. I could say no in so many different ways. I could say no in a way that make you feel better. I can say no in a way that make you feel shitty, you know. But with a smartphone, with all this app, you say no in one dimension. Everything's flat. You reject people in a way, it's just so direct, and there's no ambiguous feeling
there's
about
no
it.
Ambiguity,
It just, you know, I don't know if it's good and bad. But I do feel like humans are more complicated than that, and we learn from each other's facial expression of how we communicate to learn this person, learn about this person, to learn to better communicate, to learn to accept rejection. and I feel like our next generation, if, you know, digital products, all they use, they all communicate through the group chat, through the emoji. I think afraid that a lot of this human interaction are lost if we keep doing this way. But something that really encouraging to us is that we actually seeing a lot of our users are younger generation, you know, from 24 to 35. And those are the people that born into social media, born into smartphone. They never know the world without smartphone or social media. Mm-hmm. Unlike me, you know, I came from feature phone, flip phone. I know what it feel like. But the funny thing is that those younger generation, they are our majority of our audience. It's pretty amazing that they actually have that self-aware awareness, knowing this something was wrong. I don't know. I have a theory that I feel like, you know, our age, 35, 45, we came from that stage without smartphones. So we value like map, how map changes how our brand, how we use to walk around, how we go to destination, right? That's a huge change. And I feel like
massive change. Yeah.
Yeah. And we, our group, age group, probably won't be able to let go so easily because it's added so much value to our life versus younger generation. They know they have all kinds of resources handy. They could do anything on a smartphone. So they start to realize, okay, but what about me? What about my time? What about my attention? I don't want to just follow whoever is on social media. I want to be okay without get approval from Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook.
Yeah, it's having that ability to, because I'm 42, and so I remember life pre cell phone pagers and cell phones and dial up internet. And I remember as a kid just playing all the time. I didn't have access to iPads or video. I wasn't even allowed to have a video game system when I was a kid. So
you had a really good parents.
Yeah, like my mom was a pioneer in a lot of ways. And I remember, you know, now I look at sort of other kids' experiences and it makes me a bit sad that, you know, they're not experiencing the richness of a butterfly, you know, of a blade of grass, of, you know, but
creativity.
It's cool what you're saying. Yeah, creativity.
It's like, you know, when you need the most, the evidence that you could probably seeing in your kids is that, you know, they came up, when they bored, they came up with the most ridiculous, funny game ever to play. When they're bored, and you come up with the best idea when you're showering, there's nothing to do but just to talk to yourself, right? And I think boredom is such an important element of our life. Like how many artists portrait being created, art being created, sound being right because you're bored. And I think smartphone in a way took away that time we supposed to have with ourselves, and we become really afraid of boredom. We kind of feel like, oh, boredom is such a prison time, right? But it shouldn't be like that. Yeah, and when kids are bored back in the days, what do? You give them a piece of paper, or they carry a notebook. They start to draw. They start to write down stuff that make no sense. They, when they have a question, they ask around and think about a question themselves and come up with all kinds of wrong answers. And so that's how they learn. And when they get to the right answer, that answer becomes so profound, and they memorize the whole process. So now what happened is, when you have a question, you can always get an answer right away on Google. You don't have to think for yourself. You don't have to go through the process of being wrong and embarrassed, came up with ridiculous answer that no one agrees and have debate about it, right? So we don't do that anymore. So it's unfortunate, but we're hoping that, you know, a lot of people start to realize that and then start to getting that time back for themselves through iPhones, through something different, through weekend retreat, this time that trip or something like that. I mean, I think it's healthy that I think this backlash to those big tech companies, I think it's really healthy.
Well, it feels like it's happening throughout our whole experience, in that we are, in a lot of ways, feeling really disconnected from the planet, disconnected from each other, disconnected from, I mean, just our experience with smelling a tree. You know, I spend so much time in nature because I need it if I don't have it. And I love what you said about boredom, that boredom is seemingly this prison, as you said, you know, this place that we don't want to get trapped in. It's just like numbness, like this idea that there's something wrong with those states, as opposed to those states are necessary for rumination, for transition, for sitting in uncomfortable feelings. And, you know, it's a simpler version of that is when we had to go find something on a map, right? Like, I used to be a rep and cover a city, a territory, and I'd look up on the database on the laptop an address, and then I'd look on a city map, you know, like E2, right? And then I'd go coordinate, and anyone who had a map knows what I'm talking about. And I'd end up in the wrong place sometimes, but you know what was cool is that you'd end up in the right place. You'd end up in these serendipitous moments that never would have happened. I find a little grocery store or a little restaurant. And it's reduced our ability. Like, you think about going for a hike and someone putting on a map, here's where the hike is, and you draw it, and then you drive and you take the wrong exit, and then you take the right exit and you get there. And
it's such an experience.
Right. Like, your tolerance for ambiguity and uncertainty is much higher because you don't have a Google waypoint. You're like someone who's a friend holds the knowledge of the hike entrance or whatever it is, and you get there and you're not certain you're going to get there, and you finally get it. And I think that same intolerance for ambiguity and uncertainty exists in how we operate in our relationships, our fear of vulnerability, our fear of, you know, we just need to be certain about everything. Because you said, I can go on Google and find the answer to everything, you know? And
yeah. And like, that experience it can't replace that. In a way, when we create the device, we want it to make that experience special. When I say experience, disconnecting, we want to make that special, right? So when you just, you know, turn off your smartphone or delete your app and you still carry your smartphone, you're not making a hard decision. I know it sounds weird because, you know, it's going light is not easy. When I say not easy, meaning making that choice is a process, right? So you have your smartphone, you have your light phone, and when you about to go out, you're deciding what to use, what tool makes sense. And then you decide, okay, I don't need camera with me for the next 2 hours. I don't care about social media, what's happening on social media, you know, next couple hours. I'm good. I'm going to go out. I'm going to carry the light phone. I'm committed to go light. And you take light phone with you and go out. The next couple hours become really special because you always get reminded by yourself, I make this decision. I am going to trying to look for new things. I am going to make small talk or making weird conversation or eye contact with my neighbors, right? So that experience become really special, and that choice you make that experience profound. I feel like that's the real value of life phone. Obviously, we want a device to look beautiful and simple. We create tools that we take out distraction, no advertisement, no unnecessary menus. But in a way, that's just living your pocket. We have a lot of people really resonate with what we're trying to do and bought the life phone, and really excited, get the life phone, unboxing it, all beautiful and nice, and then what? You know, because I don't really want people to use the device. It's not the point. Like that's it. You put it in your pocket. You feel like you have the peace of mind that you have all the tools you need. Then what? The next question is you. Like right. So we've been the last couple of years. I think that's one thing that we're trying to do with our users, potential users. We're trying to give them, you know, prompts saying, hey. Maybe what do you love to do the most? You know, maybe pick up painting, or if you like photographer, you could bring your film camera, bring a notebook, right? What do you love to do? Like that's the value of life phone. The next, right? And early on, when people ask me if life phone is the solution for the smartphone addiction, I always said, I don't see life phone as a solution. We actually see life phone as philosophically, it's a question we're asking people, right? So imagine if you don't have your smartphone, you're sitting in the park, you bring life phone with you, we basically eliminate all the temptation. There's no easy way to escape boredom. There's no portal for you to swipe things every 5 seconds. There's no quick bite information for you to consume and disregard right away, right? So you're sitting there, there's a boundary being established, right? You are bonded to things in front of you, to your thoughts. So what are you going to do? What do you want to think about? You want to think about how far away this Mars, the planet, really is, how big our galaxy is, what's black matter, what's a black hole, or something else? How is a flower gets here? You know, like that's the question we're asking, and I think that question we just, you know, with smartphone and all the easy escape access to info, we just don't have that time for ourselves. And that was something that we really value. So we wanted to, you know, offer that opportunity for people that use life phone to get that opportunity to ask themselves the questions and, you know, getting some balance of our behavior with our smartphone.
It's got to be one of the most radical ideas that ever came out of a Google incubator. I'm like, hey, make technology building more addictive. Make us all use this more. Find a way to monetize attention. And you're like, let's fuck all that. Let's just create something people will just use minimally, but will allow them to be present maximally. And, you know, it's been such a value in my life, learning how to interact with it, having a world that's obviously created. My business largely exists on social media. So I don't devalue social media because it's allowed access for, you know, me to create a business, to help people, to help myself, to learn. And so it's about balance, as you said, it's about everything. It's like, when is the tool useful? And the tool's not useful when I'm present with my partner. The tool's not useful when I'm with my family. The tool's not useful when I want to reduce my anxiety due to access to me. And, you know, I think like it's been so valuable to me that for everyone on my work team, they're all getting life phones because
no,
I don't want them to also I want them to get the same benefit I do, because I look at some of them sometimes are like working in the wee hours because they can, because mm-hmm. there's access to them. And I'm like, you know what? The person who, I think it's, you know, culture always is led by, it's by the interactions of the people within the business, obviously, but it's also by the values that are shared, especially by leadership. And for me, it's like, I can't just value my own balance and not their balance. And so, you know, we have good boundaries around like weekend access, after hours access, hours they work. But I really was like, everyone needs a life phone because it's changed my life. So,
yeah, we learned from our user too that going light, it's better with friends. Going light is better with your partners, right? You both mm-hmm. are going light with your light phone. You no one is expecting the other person to suddenly take out their smartphone and start swiping, right? And there are researches, you probably know this, out there just saying that even if you put your smartphone upside down, even if you turn off your smartphone, as long as you see the 8-inch device, as long as you feel the device in your pocket, it constantly distracting you. There's no
100%.
It's constantly distracting you from what you're doing. And they actually did the research. I forgot which institution that. If someone in the table settings, if someone has a smartphone on the table in front of them, their conversation changed because you expect people to check the text message, so you don't go in deep on your conversation. You always like in this defense that, okay, you know, this is gonna get interrupted, and you're gonna be take out of the moment of the conversation. So it's unfortunate.
It reduces the amount of vulnerability that people have. And it makes so much sense that part of my consciousness is being, my awareness is going to my phone with the idea it might light up, or even if it's face down, that there might be something available to me.
Yeah.
And I don't think people realize, like, this is designed to hit your dopamine. This is designed to feed. I remember reading that when people discover new information, it feeds the same part of their brain as when people discovered food, that it feeds the same, you know, this enrichment, which is so false. It's not to say that the value of information isn't amazing, obviously. But I think the other side of this, which I was just thinking about as you were speaking previously, is that because we can find the answer to every, quote unquote, everything on internet, although I think you could argue that a lot of it is curated for you. I think people in Canada, the United States, and Europe, a lot of places in the world, they assume that their news is not propaganda, even though certainly is a lot of propaganda. And I think it's made us also devalue elders, devalue the wisdom of our elders, which is also, I was saying the other day on my Instagram that because we have been marketed to that youth is essential to maintain youth, it has had it so we do not value the wisdom of elders. And what happens is our wisdom ends up trapped in body modifications and fillers. And so when someone is old, we actually see it as something wrong with them, that aging got them, rather than we need people who are aging to infer wisdom to us. And I don't think that, you know, there's obviously a lot of wisdom on the internet and on podcasts and on YouTube. But it doesn't value our own life experiences when we're trying to stay 22 years old, you know?
Yeah,
I don't want to be who I was at 22. Are you kidding?
We don't have time to reflect, I think. Like in like you just mentioned, the curating information, I think, is a huge problem at our current era right now, right? You could say, oh, I go to Google, I go to Twitter, social media, YouTube, I get information from there. Why is that curated? But I think a lot of people didn't realize is that even though you just go to youtube.com, you are being feeding you the similar video that you watched previously.
Right.
So your idea keep getting reinforced. You're never seeing the other side of argument. I actually think that's like one of the issue or reason that we become so, you know, extreme on both sides. No one can find a common ground, just because when you all your Facebook are pro something, yeah, you're always seeing that pro message, the similar yeah. message. You're not seeing the other side of the argument, and you have to like actively searching for it to see that. Otherwise, all your feeds are being curated by your preference. And I think that's like one of the biggest issues our current stage right now. Like we can't Agreed. Find a common ground. It's supposed to be that either side could find a common ground. Either side could agree to something that's so obvious, so logical, right? But now we become so extreme. I think partially because the information are biased on social media.
Yeah, I agree. We're in a space where it is radical to be a bridge between, you know, to be an objective space, but you only achieve that because what you're speaking to is like, we're all in these echo chambers, you know, where the algorithm is feeding me information that either validates what I think or completely opposes it so that I get angry and stay on the feed. Mm-hmm. And then you know, hate my uncle because he believes in something different than me rather than the real bridge is to ask questions and be curious.
Yeah, that
like
really
you're talking
gets
about.
Me. Like the negative side of like the dark side of social media is like because the intention of the machine is to make money through your engagement. The machine does not care what information you're getting, what emotion being triggered. So what's the easiest way to trigger our emotion? The negative stuff, right? The stuff
yeah.
that you hate. So you start interacting with it, you start to comment, you start to like, you know, hating this person, hating this speech, like, and it feeds you more information because you interact with it. it's really a dark energy on social media that they drive this negative engagement, make you angry, so you engage. It's yeah.
It's really sad. And you know, I think people don't, because, you know, I don't work for Lightphone. You didn't reach out to me to be on this podcast. I reached out to you because of the value. I reached out to you when I discovered the product because I was like, I think this product is my way out, like my way out of being co-opted, being addicted, being, you know, because you get those reports on your iPhone from your screen time and you're like, I could be spending that time creating. I could be spending, not to say that, you know, of 5 hours, you know, let's say I used it 3 hours a day. Of the 3 hours, maybe 30, 45 minutes was actually productive, but the rest was just mindless time. And we're giving our lives away to spend it in other dimensions that aren't actually here, having arguments that are created for us to stay divided so that we can yell at each other and spend more money because we feel shitty and buy more shit. And I'm thinking like, okay, well, the way out is to actually get present with yourself. And I think, you know, as you said, something like a Lightphone is a path to that, is a path to being present with yourself and taking control over your life. We were supposed to use phones, not be used by phones. And that's a big difference.
Yeah, we're supposed to use those phones as tools. It's opposite now. and when we start the product, when we start introducing the product in the first place a couple of years ago, 6 years ago, the feedback was really polarized, right? We have people love Lightphone, thinking that, oh wow, this is gonna make my life so different. And we have the other side of people, you know, not so much like this is, I love my smartphone. What are you talking about? Why do I need another device or a simple phone? Why do I need to go back in time and get a not so smartphone? Right.
Yeah,
but
so
I always, I always feel like, you know, if your phone is smart, it's that means you're not that smart. Because it's, right, because he's doing all the things for you, and you stop thinking.
That's funny. If your phone's smart, you're not. That I like that.
Yeah, it's all doing everything for you. But like, it's I recognize the value of smartphone. I
of
build
course,
smartphone.
Yeah.
I personally build feature phone. I mean, my first project is Motorola Flip Razr phones.
I remember 15, those bad boys.
16
I had
years
one of
ago.
Those. Yeah.
Yeah, I
revolutionized
I worked with them a little bit. And so, like, seeing the progression from feature phone to the first, you know, QWERTY keypad smartphone to iPhone, you know, the progression, the transition is great. It has so much value. But I think we're getting a point that we forgot, you know, what are we giving up? Like the convenience of having millions of tools, games, and social media in your pocket. That's awesome. But the question now is, what are we giving up right now? We're giving up so much. And you're like, oh, what if I need this game for that 10 seconds when I'm waiting for a grocery? What if my friends FaceTime me when I'm taking a walk down the street? Oh, what if someone texts me? But like, if you actually think about it, those can't wait. It's really not that urgent. And as long as you have a call, a text message, you have a way to communicate. If people want to find you, they will find you.
Always.
and they won't just like, oh, let me casually tweet this person and I expect him to reply me right away. It's like, why do you expect me to reply you right away through Twitter or your likes? And it's, you know, we're giving up so much of our time, data, attention to this convenience that we feel like we need from this millions of apps that we carry with us. It's just really not necessary. As a designer, as you're thinking about from design perspective, you know, you always design things with intentionality. You design everything with intention, right? So if you design a tool that you wanted to carry with you to this next 5 hours walk, if you are a designer, as the designer the tool for yourself, are you going to design a tool that carry millions of app and all fighting for your attention that you carry with you? No, you're not going to do that. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, I think that's just what's wrong with our technology ecosystem, right? Everything is driven by the business model, by, you know, try to get more people to use it longer so they can make money. It's not driven by what we need, what we want, what's healthy for us. And, you know, it sometimes doesn't seem obvious, but that's what's designed. That this we wanted to, you know, kind of sense what users not telling us, right? We wanted to see problems that people having, but it's not obvious. I think this is the problem that's not obvious, but profoundly change our life. I'm not sure it's for the best all the time.
I would argue that it is often not for the best, because anything done in large consumption is abusive. It's self-abuse. And, you know, we don't see it as that because it's enriching and it feels good and there's connection. But we, you know, you asked such a profound question, which we don't often consider, which is, what are you giving up? What are you giving up to answer people within seconds, to have your worth fueled by likes, to spend so much time? Right. Is it worth it? And, you know, when your worth is connected to your social media presence, then I would argue, no, it's absolutely not worth it. And if you just ask the question, is your phone pulling you away from presence with yourself? Then you know you're in an unhealthy relationship with your phone. And, you know, the iPhone, I would argue, and the technology that it's offering is actually what it feels like to get into a healthy relationship after you've been in one that's chaotic, you know, one that is exploitive of your energy and your time. And, you know, when you said that design, say, I've never been a designer, but when you said like you design everything with intention. And if you actually look at if you're assuming what the intention is of the designers of smartphones, it is actually nefarious. It's to consume you. It's to monetize you. It's to exploit you. And yet we're all okay also with big tech choosing what information is okay and what is not. We've already seen a lot of fact checks or bullshit and some tech person being like, oh, I looked this up and there's an article that says that's not true, not true. And, you know, they're in charge. They're deciding, you know, and I think a lot of people might disagree with me here, but in a lot of ways, I find they're deciding that then if it supports the narrative, then great, you can have it and anyone can say it. But if it is in any way, even if they have more qualifications than the fact checker, they're X'd. And to me, that's a very dangerous world to allow our consciousness to exist in, and where we say truth is found. Because truth, when we say it's found in a place that someone else gets to determine what's on it and what gets fed to us, then we are following someone's truth, and that is called propaganda, and that's hijacking us. And I have a lot to say about that.
Yeah, our smartphones become so powerful. It's pretty amazing that we're having this conversation talking about phones, right? Marty Cooper, he's the first person that created a phone, a pioneer for Motorola phones, I think, if I remember correctly. So Marty Cooper famously said, sorry if I quote him wrong, but I think he said that, you know, you can't design one device for every person. You know, if you try to do one thing for everyone, you never do anything good. And I think that's the essence of every tool. Wow. Like, that's why we have different cars. We have SUV, we have sport car, we have little mini cars for different purpose. And phone, in a way, like, why are we rejecting or cannot see through smartphone? It only makes sense that we have options, right? And that's what we're trying to do. I get people push back saying, oh, my smartphone is great, and I would say that's great for you and that's awesome if that, you know, make your life so much better. I think that's awesome. And you know, for some people that feel that anxiety, feel that stress, that negative feeling created by carrying a smartphone all the time, I think it only makes sense to create a modern, simple phone that has all the modern tools without all the distraction and advertisements, so that you feel better but still have all the right tools, right? You know, you could also go back to use Motorola flip phone, Nokia candy bar, you know, this phone designed for 30 years ago. Those are fine. You know, if that works in your region, you still have 2G network, you think those vintage phone working perfectly, that's awesome too. You know, my opinion is that those are, you know, 2G, most of places are retiring 2G network, they're bulky, no one's using them, most of them still have tweeters on there and social media as well. There's company making an app store for feature phone as well. Yeah, so I don't really see it as a decent replacement, but if that works for some people, that's awesome. So my point is that we should have options. We should have healthy, balanced options. It's like diet, right? You eat greasy food all the time, but sometimes you want to eat healthy food. It doesn't mean when you eat healthy food and that you have to stick with healthy food all the time, right? It's okay to have balance. It's okay to try different things. It doesn't mean that when I eat healthy food and I'm not going to go back to greasy food, right? Mm-hmm. So it's an analogy that sometimes we use to describe life. Like, going light is taking it's like a diet.
It's like a bunch of salads, which no one ever got worse by eating salad a lot.
Yeah, you could do that for lunchtime today, and you could go back to your regular food and dinner. Or if you decided to become a vegan, that's awesome too, and that's only good for you.
Right.
So it's always healthy to have a balanced of options, and that's what we're trying to do, like offering different options, but hopefully giving you enough utility tools that making you feel that you have what you need. And this is something that we learn from our user too, like what tools make sense to you, what are your essential tools, because your essential might not be mine. And the next question I always get is that, okay, now you become a smartphone, now you have all the tools, right? You turn it into a smartphone. And I will argue that, you know, in our perspective, we are really clear on what tool makes sense. We have our principle. So I could probably categorize into three principles of what tools make sense on iPhone toolbox. Number one, there's no advertisement. There will never be any advertisement in any of our tool. Number two, every action has a clear ending. So you get a direction from A to B. Yeah. And that action ends. You listen to a playlist of your music, and that playlist is supposed to calm you down, and that action ends. You listen to a playlist, or you text someone, the action ends. There's no additional underlining design to encourage you, to entice you to spend more time on iPhone. Number three, there's no infinite or unlimited feet, right? Nothing for you to browse, nothing for you to swipe. It's no social media, there's no browser. So we're not encouraging you to keep swiping with no purpose, with no intention, right? So as long as a tool fit into those criteria, we're happy to create them. I mean, our only constraint is that we are still a pretty small company, so we have limited resource. So we try to prioritize what tools we wanted to do, you know, and at the same time improving the core functionality of iPhone. You know, we're about to launch directions, so people can use iPhone to get a direction from A to B. We have a roadmap of tools that we wanted to create. Calendar, same being one of them, notes that you can take notes, right? So hopefully we have a toolbox that has enough tool to make more people feel comfortable to have more essential tools. So I don't know, millions of more people give a try. if I offer a calendar tool, then 1 million more people decided this is good enough. This offered me a peace of mind. I know, you know, my meeting schedule, my calendar, then that's awesome to me.
I love it. Well, Kai, I so appreciate what you guys are doing at Lifephone and your mission and your intention with your design. And I just appreciate all the things you shared today, because there are a lot for us to think about and consider in our own relationship with technology, as well as just our relationship to the world and to each other. So thank you. I really, really am so grateful.
Oh, no, thank you. Thanks for having me. It's always fun talking about iPhone and what have we learned so far. Hopefully, it's fun to you too.
It absolutely is. And for the people listening, where can they find out more about iPhone and maybe buy one?
Lifephone.com. It's probably the best channel to learn more about iPhone and place your order. We often sold out because we're just making small batches every couple of months. So we could use as many support as we can.
Perfect. Well, we'll make sure we put those links in the show notes. Thanks again for your time, Kai.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. If this episode resonated with you, one of the best ways to support the show is to go subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss any more. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to it, or share the episode with your community on Instagram or whatever social place you like to hang out. This helps get it into more people's ears, and I'm so grateful for your support always. Thanks again for tuning in. Much love.